ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I have such a complicated relationship with the term work-life balance. I kind of hate the term.
Work-life balance is something that, you know, just generally in pop culture and in our daily lives, we're actively seeking and we're sort of trying to achieve. But it seems to have, it seems to be quite a sort of loaded construct, doesn't it? It seems to have quite a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people.
We're working part-time, we're financially stable, we have 12-minute commutes, we're walking distance from good schools. On paper, we've got it all. But I realised that work-life balance was a myth.
Okay, so just revealing, I'm not a fan of the concept of work-life balance either. I'll share why later in the show. So I've been searching for a more helpful approach for you to try. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for this working life, what could replace the idea of work-life balance and help you build a sustainable and flourishing career? Let's zoom out and get some perspective first.
My name is Tim Duggan, and I don't really have a title. I call myself an optimist who loves thinking about big ideas. Work, for me, has always been part of my identity. I spent 15 years helping to build a company with some of my friends that was a media company for young Australians, and I gave everything to it. Work was the most important thing in my life. For many of us, we are led to believe that work is the most important thing. It is the part of our life that we need to give all of our energy, the best hours of our day, the most productive years of our life to work. And it was my father passing away was the first time that I really started to question, is that the correct path for us to go down?
Well, a lot of people would say the holy grail is work-life balance. What do you make of this term?
I think it's really overused. I think that it puts work and life on this pedestal together, as though they are equal parts of our life. So you need to balance your life with work, and each of these things are 50-50 and you need to do that. And if you actually stop and think about it, life, which is everything we do outside work, is and should be more important than work, because life is everything. Life is our relationship with our friends, our family, our partner, our faith, our community, everything. We have our mind. We have everything that we do to keep ourselves happy and interests and hobbies. And we have our bodies, which is probably more important than work will ever be, because if your body gives out, it doesn't matter if you have a great job or you're engaged at work. If you've got ill health, all of that gets put to the wayside. So the way that I think about work-life balance is I actually think it's a misnomer. I think it's misnamed. And I think that we need to rethink the name itself. And the way that I think about it, which is a simple reframing because I really believe in the power of words, is to flip the words over. Instead of calling it work-life balance, just call it life-work balance. And all of a sudden, we're putting life at the center. We're putting life in front of work. And I think it's really powerful. So every time that I hear work-life balance now, in my head, sometimes I'll correct people, but you know, if we're having a conversation, it might be rude to correct someone. In my head, I just flip it and I think, life-work balance. And all of a sudden, it puts life first and just makes us rethink the importance that we place on work.
So life-work, not work-life. Lock that in your brain. Like a lot of people, Tim reassessed things during the pandemic. He sold his business and spent time figuring out his relationship with work. He wrote a book about it called Work Backwards. It led him to reflect on how it all started.
So I grew up in Sydney. I went to a private school. I acknowledge the privilege that comes from that. And most of my friends and schoolmates get sucked into this mode where we go into sometimes university degrees that we might not actually want to do but think that we should. Or sometimes we choose careers based on what the salary is going to be. I remember when I first started university, people used to rank the university courses by what the starting salaries were for the graduates. And people would choose, oh, I'm going to be an accountant because their starting salary is X. And someone else said, well, I'm going to go study medicine because their starting salary is Y. And that is part of this problem where you're thinking about it work first, as opposed to thinking about it life first. And so the problem with that is that that leads us into areas where we might not have interest or passion in, and we might be motivated by other things that eventually wane. So if money is your main motivation to go into a job, that will eventually wane. And you might wake up one time and realize, hold on a second, I don't actually really enjoy this area. Sure, I get money from it. Sure, it helps me pay my mortgage. It helps me feed my family. And that is really important motivators. But you need to also have that intrinsic motivation yourself. And I believe, and part of my hypothesis, is that that is the root cause of all of these areas of malaise that we're seeing around work. So burnout, so the increase in disengagement, so fear, all those things are coming from the root cause of us not knowing what we're doing at the start.
And Tim, what's the quote you love? Because it gets to the heart of what is wrong with our focus on work first.
Jimmy Carr is a great comedian and he's very smart on some of these topics. And in a podcast, he said to somebody, how much would you sell your life for? And it's a provocative question. And I think the first thought to that is, I don't know, I wouldn't sell my life for anything. And his claim is that most people are selling their lives for £30,000, £40,000, which is the starting salary or the salary that you pay someone in the UK. And his belief is that you have these wonderful, interesting, creative people who are giving up the majority of their lives for a 9-to-5 salary where they might not enjoy what they're doing. And that's a really provocative question to ask.
Okay, so you've done all this research, you locked yourself away, and then you also came out and interviewed a whole bunch of people. So how do you think we can fix this, Tim?
It is a great question, and I don't have the solution, and I kind of want to preface that. I have a solution that works for me. It worked for about 60 or 70 people that I spoke to around the world, and hopefully it's going to work for some people, but it's not a silver bullet solution. And the simple way that I think about this is that if there is the default mode, which is you go from work and then it gives you money and that gives you a lifestyle, the solution that I'm proposing is called Work Backwards, which is the name of the book. And it's to flip all of that on its head. So instead of starting with work first, you actually start with life first. And so what that means is figuring out who you are, what you want to do, what really motivates you as a human. Then the second step is money, because that's a very important part of this conversation. But instead of just going down the default path, figuring out what money you actually need to live the life that you want to live, so questioning some of these things that we haven't questioned perhaps. And then the third part then is then thinking about work. So thinking about either what are some of the tools that I can use to make my current job better, or do I need to change jobs? And the work part can be as simple as making small changes to claw back minutes a day, or it could be making large changes to change your life.
Carly Hopgood and her husband moved their young family away from the Sydney rat race.
We took the plunge, made the sea change, and we moved to regional New Zealand. So my husband is a Kiwi, and we moved back to where his family was for a much slower pace of life.
Carly and her husband are both engineers and were able to manage pretty well. Yet after a while, this happened.
A couple of years ago, when my husband was working part-time, he was working school hours, he had plenty of time with the kids, he was still going fine in his career. I found him constantly saying things like, I just can't find any time to play in a band, or I don't have time to join a soccer team, or I can't find time to fix the fence. And I thought, well, my goodness, if you can't find the time when you're working 25 hours a week and you don't have commutes, then who on earth is ever going to be able to find this mythical concept of work-life balance?
Carly realised that for her family, juggling life wasn't about the perfect combination of hours or flexible work. It was about this.
Feeling like we're enough when we're at home, feeling like we're enough when we're at work, instead of constantly feeling like I'm not good enough at work, I'm not good enough at home. And also with our mind always being at the other place. So when we're at work, we're worried about the kids, and when we're at home, we're thinking about what we need to be doing at work. What we actually want is to be able to be present where we're at and just enjoy things as we go. And us actually chasing that work-life balance had distracted us. It had distracted us from doing the internal housework that we needed to be able to do to really have the lives that we wanted, to be able to enjoy work and to be able to enjoy home.
So the question is, how do we get beyond the concept of balance? We'll find out how Carly is managing that a bit later. Let's look at life-work or work-life balance, whatever you want to call it, through a research lens.
My name is Stacey Parker. I'm an associate professor in organisational psychology at the University of Queensland. A couple of years ago, they did a lovely big review. They found over 290 papers on the topic, and there was 233 different definitions of what work-life balance is. So it's not just, you know, general lay people, you and I, who are sort of like, what is this? It's also academia that's got, you know, quite a lot of work to do to get a bit more clear on that. But through that analysis, what they arrived on is it's a subjective experience. It's this sense of feeling satisfied and effective in your work and non-work roles to the extent that you value those roles. So you can see it's very personal, and it might change for different people at different times in their life based on their priorities.
And why is feeling that we have some kind of balance in our life important, do you think?
Well, the research shows it's quite, you know, moderately associated with general life satisfaction, which is a really big indicator of our sort of general health and well-being. So feeling in balance, I think, is sort of a bit of a pathway to more general good health and mental health and well-being. I think when people feel that they've got the balance right, they feel like they can be their best selves in those different roles. You feel like you can be effective in the work domain, and also be a good partner, be a good mother, be a good dad, etc.
I've had a difficult relationship with the concept of work-life balance, I must say, Stacey, and the reason why I find it difficult is that I think the word balance somehow puts too much pressure on us, and I don't think many people feel like they can ever achieve whatever work-life balance is. What is your reaction to that?
Yes. No, I see, like, I completely relate to that. I think that's also why myself and other researchers in this area have sort of started to think a little bit beyond the idea of balance and started to think a bit more about how we manage our energy and the daily grind day to day as we go to work and go home and go back again. Because, you know, this idea of balance and keeping work and life separate, it's so challenging these days with hybrid working, with, you know, our work email on our phone. All the boundaries are very blurred and very difficult to manage. So I try to think about and study, and so do others like myself, well, rather than managing those boundaries or the balance, how do we manage our sense of energy as we go to work, you know, excel in our work, hopefully, and then, you know, end the day and transition into our home time, into our leisure time.
That's a useful way of framing it, transitioning from work into home time and thinking about what we do each day instead of the bigger picture.
Recently, I've been starting to look at how you experience your work day, what it was like. You know, when you went about it, did you find it enjoyable or was it quite aversive? Did you find that you just had a lot of good momentum and made rapid progress that day? Or was it really sort of stifling and resistant and, you know, a bit of procrastination or hard to get going or keep going? And I think that these sort of experiences of working that day can sort of determine a little bit how you end the day. You know, and on a more good day, a bright day, it might have been more fun, you might have got more done. That's a more optimal state to end the day and transition into your leisure time. You'll finish the day feeling good and not worried or ruminating about what you didn't get done. You're feeling hopefully quite satisfied with what you achieved that day. And that's just so much more optimal for then transitioning into your leisure time, having meaningful connections with friends, family, engaging in recreation, and, you know, making the most of that time so you more fully recover. Whereas if it was, you know, a bad day, you know, so the dark side, if it was really, you know, dodgy work, maybe it was really hard or aversive or stressful in some way, and maybe you, you know, just didn't get as much done as you wanted to because it wasn't the type of work you really wanted to do, you're going to end the day feeling more drained and depleted of your energy, potentially having a lot of unfinished tasks left over that will make you sort of potentially find it more difficult to transition into leisure time and recover, because you'll be ruminating on what happened, ruminating on what was left to be done, not feeling sort of satisfied, worrying about the next day, and also just generally not having the right frame of mind or energy to meaningfully engage in that home life.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Carly Hopgood turned her problem into a side hustle and now works with people as a work-life coach. This is what helps her family engage in a more satisfying life.
Each of us needs to be able to have some time that we use to recharge our batteries, to fuel our soul. And so it's not about doom scrolling, sitting on the couch. It's about doing something either creative or moving our body in a way that really makes us feel good. So I do a lot of art and painting. I also run. And so going for my zone two slow jogs is actually for my mental health. It's actually my me time. It's actually what keeps me much more present and sane. For my husband, he plays the guitar. And so him being able to get 10, 15 minutes to play the guitar each day actually makes him less grumpy. It's being able to guard that time, not feel guilty about it, and really change our assumptions and expectations of ourselves and life around that. So often we feel guilty because we feel like, oh, we're being selfish by doing that. But we've reframed that and we've made it that actually it's selfish not to do it, because you end up being grumpier and less happy for the other person.
Research shows recovery activities like these are really important, and holidays aren't enough.
The benefits of a vacation only last about 2 to 4 weeks, after which you're just as burnt out as you were before the vacation. So I'm not saying don't take vacations. You know, there's lots of great reasons to take vacations, you know, have lovely adventures, experiences, you know, time with family, friends, but it's not a solution to burnout, to work stress. What we know from the literature is it's more about those daily, weekly habits. So what we do in our evenings and weekends really seems to matter. And here we know it's not so great to spend more time on work, so to attend to work emails or monitor them or do more work in your downtime. We know that just sitting on the couch and doing a bit of Netflix, couch surfing, is sort of a bit like treading water. It's not bad, but it's not great either. What's really good is engaging in more active recreation, so socializing, physical pursuits, creative pursuits, hobbies, things like that. And potentially the reason for that is because those sorts of more active forms of recreation bring about these important recovery experiences. So you psychologically feel like you had a chance to relax and also detach from work. Those ones seem to be particularly important, that you have those psychological experiences of detachment and relaxation in your non-work time.
So your recovery activity should have those two key ingredients, detachment and relaxation. Got it. What are the best ways to recover them?
So my advice to people, if they're looking to make a change and do something to help their recovery, is to sort of think about something that they can easily implement into their routine that could help them feel those experiences of relaxation and detachment. There's a lot of other experiences that have been studied that are also good, like mastering something outside of work. So for myself, I like to do knitting. It's so daggy and a bit silly coming from Brisbane because it's so hot here and I hardly ever get to wear the knitted objects I make. But I find that the knitting is really great because I'm doing something that's fairly low effort, but it's got some skill development to it. And so it requires just the right amount of concentration that I can forget about work, but it's not too taxing or too hard for me to pick up after a hard work day. And then there's other things like people do volunteering for different causes, help out with their kids' sports or whatever. And they derive some meaning or purpose from that. There's also other experiences around affiliation and connection with others, of course, like socializing, catching up with friends or family, making time for some nice, more uninterrupted chat with your partner could really help bring about these experiences of affiliation. And these sort of positive experiences outside of work is what helps us really unwind and recover.
All these things can help you achieve satisfaction in your life overall too. Give it a go and report back, please. Let's check back with Tim Duggan for his final advice.
We are living in the best moment to rethink this. So I think that a lot of people are reconsidering how work fits in with their life. And it's not a coincidence. We've come out of COVID and something like 40% of people have reconsidered the role that work plays in their life. So it's probably a relatively common question that people are thinking about. And a really simple way is to just look at all of the tools that you have available to you now. So everyone's work is different, but there's so many different tools available to us. And by tools, I mean things like remote working, things like hybrid working, things like four-day work weeks, flexible working, taking a career break. Artificial intelligence is a tool. Even figuring out how to do meetings better, I consider a tool because you can claw back minutes or hours of your day. So I think my advice and the simple thing to do is to look around you at your workplace and unique situation that you're in, and see what are some of these tools that you could apply and how could you apply them. And even if you claw back a few minutes of each day by using AI better or by figuring out a way to be more flexible with your workplace once you speak to your boss, that is a win.
How has this played out for you then in the end, working backwards?
I consider myself the biggest experiment that I can do on work. And I have experimented with everything over the past couple of years. I lived and worked from a camper van for 6 months as we drove around Australia. I then lived and worked from Europe as we crawled around to try and find somewhere to live. And my husband and I now live in Mallorca, the beautiful Spanish island of Mallorca, where I remote work from there. I get up early and work on Australian time. I work 3 days a week now. So I've rethought all of these different ways that we could work, and I use all these different tools, from flexible working to remote working to using AI to streamlining my meetings. And each of them is a tool to be used at the time, and it's something that changes. And just because how I'm living now works for me now, it might not work for me in the future. But I think I am a living example of how anyone is able to use some of these tools to be able to live and work better.
Righto. So work-life balance as a concept might be flawed, but definitely taking stock and reconsidering the role work plays in your life is an important thing to do consistently. Thanks to big thinker Tim Duggan, author of Work Backwards, Stacey Parker, organisational psychologist and associate professor at University of Queensland School of Psychology, and Carly Hopgood, engineer and work-life coach. And thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne. Until next time, work it like a charm.